Welcome to the Citizen Church Podcast. We're honored that you joined us today. We hope you enjoy this episode and leave challenged and inspired.
Well, we are in episode 4 of our 4-part series, A Matter of Time. This is the last one. I'm kind of sad. I've really enjoyed doing these.
I have too. It's
and,
been fun.
Maybe we can figure out something in the future. But this is the last one for A Matter of Time. Again, my dad has written a book called A Matter of Time on family. It's selling well and really benefiting and helping a lot of people. So whether or not you feel like you need this book, you still do buy it. But also maybe consider buying it for a family member, a friend, Christian or non-Christian. This is a great book to put in the hands of anybody who wants to go deeper in what it means to have a great, successful family, mainly a godly family. But Dad, this last one is all about leadership, developing leaders in the home. And this was a great one for us to end on because this really kind of sums up really the whole idea of the book. It's early on in your book, but it sets the pace for what your heart really is for the whole reason you wrote it. I know you've shared a lot of stories about your parents in the series, but also in the podcast. And I know there's a pretty cool story that we can even open up with for this episode.
Yeah, in this chapter, I talk about the day I left home for the very first time, you know, going off to college. And so we walk out into the driveway early that morning. I was getting ready to drive to Dallas, and the car was packed. My mom handed me a box of cookies that she had baked that morning. And, you know, the tears started flowing. It was a very emotional time. And I got into the car and I pulled out onto the road and started driving away and look over and they're waving, you know, goodbye. And as I'm driving down the road, tears are streaming down my face. And this was my thought. And I'll never, ever forget this moment. As I look back at my dad standing there, I was thinking, I want to be just like him one day. Mm-hmm. You know, as an 18-year-old kid, what makes him want to be just like his father? And the only answer to that is that that father has lived a life that is admirable, and you want to have exactly what he had in life. And so I look at that, and that's a mark of leadership, mm-hmm. that you're living a life that your kids want to follow. I've said this for a lot of years that the goal when your kids are 18 and they're living leaving the house for the very first time, that you want them to walk out the door and then turn around and say, "I want to serve their God. Mm-hmm. I want to be just like them."
Yeah.
The greatest compliment and the greatest success that any parent can have.
Yeah, it is. And you know what's interesting? I think you mentioned this in episode 1, but I think it might be worth saying again. When people hear that story about your dad, my grandpa, they might think, well, of course, you know, he was probably some, you know, great positional leader, you know, probably some crazy successful guy in business. But I think it's important to know, you know, the humble beginnings of your dad, who he was, what he did for an occupation, because we make so many excuses when it comes to leadership. But leadership is really just being godly. And living a godly life, a humble life. So tell us a little bit about Grandpa.
My dad and my mom, yeah. Both, they were just what I think what people would say common people.
Yeah.
School teacher. My dad had a job that he went out and he changed meters in alleys. That's what he did for years and years, gas meters. And so he had a very, you know, hard job, mm-hmm. came in every day, dirty, dusty, but he just always had a great outlook in life.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you think about you know, their humble beginnings, but they raised three boys. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, all three of us went into the full-time ministry.
And neither of your parents were.
And no, they never had any kind of public ministry, any kind of stage. I don't think they ever spoke in front of people ever. And yet they raised up three boys that had such a passion for God, such a passion for the church that we all three are in the ministry.
It's incredible. Like, I love hearing that story because sometimes even I forget how it's just, you don't, the home and what you do for a living when it comes to raising godly kids, it doesn't matter what you do for a living. It matters who you are in the home and who you pursue. And one thing I loved about Grandpa and I love about you is you capitalize on ordinary moments and make them extraordinary. The moments that seem ordinary where you're just out to eat or you're out to coffee or you're just hanging out, riding in the car, they turn into really cool teachable moments. And you talk about that in your book, one of those moments when talking about, you know, writing something on a napkin when you're sitting in front of one of your kids. Can you kind of just go through that? And what did you mean by this in your book? And why is this such an important little
thing?
This
is such a great thing. When your kids are small, you can go to McDonald's. You can be sitting at Starbucks with your kids, yeah, and oh, and just having a drink and having a burger, and you just take a napkin, you draw a line across there, and you start talking to them. Mm-hmm. You almost can make it a game. You know, let's talk about above people and below people.
Right.
And you write above people above the line, below people below the line, and then you start talking about, you know, what does that look like? And what you're talking to them about, if they're 10 years old or 15 years old, however old they may be, that you're talking about, we are called to live at a higher level. Mm-hmm. Naturally, we gravitate to a lower lifestyle, to a right, lower level, a laziness somewhat. And you have to push yourself to a higher level. And so are you going to be a person of obedience or a person of disobedience?
Right.
Are you going to are you going to be a person of that is spirit-led or a person that is self-led? Mm-hmm. You know, and you just go down through all of these different things and talk about, you know, above or below and how do you want to live your life and how do you want to see yourself? It is remarkable what can come out of that conversation and allowing them to tell you what to write on the napkin, you know, mm-hmm, as you're beginning to write on above people. And it's above the normal, above the average of how you want to live. And it is such a great teaching. And it's a fun way to spend time with your kids.
It is. And you can adjust it for age. I mean, I just did this with my six-year-old daughter and we talked about it. You know, what would I talk to Aslan about? What does it look like to be a godly? It was right before she got baptized a few weeks ago. And I said, what does it look like to be a godly six-year-old little girl in your classroom, when you're at dance, when you're at the church? What do godly six-year-old girls do? And we talked about the above and below thing after I was reading this in the book again. And it is so cool just hearing the answers. And you can completely adjust it for your high school kids and middle school kids, depending on what they're going through in that moment. And I think it's such a cool, important thing to do with kids. I know you did it with me a lot. Whether it is that exact scenario or not, you capitalized on those routine moments and turned them into teachable opportunities. One of the things we did with our oldest daughter about a year and a half ago, you know, we all of a sudden, because of some situations, saw it as pretty critical for us to help her write a standard for what a guy should be and what she should look like spiritually in order for her to date someone. And it was interesting because you would think that a lot of times it would be the parents that would write out the standard for their daughter on what a guy should be like. But it was a teachable moment. It was just an ordinary moment. We didn't wake up that day, Mandy and I, thinking today's the day we're going to help Avery, you know, get a standard for a guy. But it was just one of those random moments where we were just like, hey, why don't we do this right now? And we slid her a piece of paper and said, why don't you go into the other room and take this into your room for a while and you write out, turn on some worship music, whatever you got to do, and write out on this paper your standard for a guy. And we'll let you know our input on it and whether or not we feel like you, you know, are at our standard, your standard. So she went and did it and came back and it was amazing. But what's so cool now is she has to live up to her own standard.
That's great. You know? That is
not
good.
Our standard. It's, yeah, her own standard. And it's such a great thing, but it all came out of one of those cool little routine moments that you were talking about. You know, I love the above people, below people thing. It's adjustable for every age group. Another thing you highlighted in the book, and I want to make sure we have time to get to some of these. This is a loaded chapter. You have a section here called Don't Make Excuses. And I think this is so important for kids, for adults. I mean, I think so much of what we're talking about in this podcast and in your book, you can apply it to family for sure, but anybody can apply these things. The don't make excuses thing is huge. And you have said this a lot. There's a few things that Woodward's always say. We don't make excuses. We finish what we start and the list goes on and on and on. And we'll get to the finish what we start in a second. Why do you think it's so important for us to train our kids when it comes to leadership to never making excuses?
This all came out of a story in the Bible, 1 Chronicles, and I'll be very, very quick with this. It was a story of Shamgar, and we don't hear this story very often because it's so short, but it talks about that in the day that he lived, there was no king in Israel, they had no leadership, Everyone did as they willed. Mm-hmm. And so it just was total chaos. And so the people stopped traveling on the roads because every time they got out on the road, they were murdered. And they were killing people everywhere. And so people were huddled in their homes, afraid to go out. People were actually starving to death because they were fearful to go outside their home. Well, Shamgar is a farmer. He's not a politician. He's not a leader. He's a common man. He's just a farmer. He has what's called an ox goat. It's just nothing but a big old pole. Mm-hmm. And then it goes on to say, and he killed 600 Philistines. And then the story ends. And you're thinking, what? How did he do that? Well, all he had was an ox goat. He just had this wooden pole. And when no one else was doing anything, he just took what he had, mm-hmm. and he went out, and the scripture says, and he saved Israel.
Yep.
All he had was a wooden stick. And so in our life, you know, the first point of that story is don't make excuses because right. what you have is enough. Mm-hmm. Because whatever you have, God will anoint that. God will touch that. God will work through you to fulfill whatever you want in life.
Yep.
And, you know, so when kids are young, notorious for saying, I can't. I can't, I can't. You know, how often do you hear that?
All the time.
And they'll say, I can't. And so when you guys were growing up, you know, that was one of the big statements that I would say to you and to your brothers.
I can say it.
Go ahead and say it if you know it so well.
Anytime we would say, I can't, you would say, you what? And then you would say, Dustin, there are two men in this world. One said I can, one said I can't. They were both right. You know, the first 10 times you said that, I thought it was pretty profound. And the next 10 times I started rolling my eyes, but I never forgot it because it's so true. If you think you can, you will.
You will.
And if you think you can't, you won't.
It is such a great statement. And it's very, very true. When our kids are saying, I can't, I can't, I can't, think about the damage that they're doing to their future.
Yep.
When they begin to say, I can, so stop them immediately. Mm-hmm. And where it's a teaching moment of us intentionally teaching our children, yes, you can. And encouraging them and always challenge them on why are you saying I can't? Because it just becomes a habit to them, but that habit will destroy their future success that God has in store for them.
Yeah, there's so many things that are packed into this because I've seen the ramifications of parents that don't work through this. I have peers, I was a youth pastor for so long. When there are parents that don't help their kids work through the I can't complex or I'm too afraid I won't complex, what it produces is honestly anxiety-ridden adults that have a victim mentality that will not succeed in life physically or spiritually. And it's devastating when you see that happen. And I know this kind of sounds funny, but it's down to these tiny, tiny, tiny little things. Like I remember being little and afraid to ride rides. And you would look at this ride, and it's not like you were making me ride some crazy roller coaster, but if you would look at this and go, that's an irrational fear. And I always remember this. If you ever saw something in us and thought, that's an irrational fear, we conquered it right then. I can't, I'm too afraid. You're like, nope, something as silly as a ride, something as silly, whatever it might be, the I can't, I won't, I'm too afraid mindset creates a victim mentality. And if there was one thing that you guys came down hard on us with, whenever we played the victim, you cut that out real quick out of us. We were not ever allowed to be a victim. Speak a little bit to that.
It's a dangerous thing, again, to allow your kids to see themselves as a victim. Mm-hmm. We're a victor.
Yeah.
And that you see yourself as that. Whatever you begin to think of is what you will become. And so, you know, someone's being mean to me, they wronged me, the teacher doesn't like me, the coach is unfair to me.
Yep.
You know, we never, ever let that really sink in, and we never let that be a part of your thinking process. It was like we kind of try to rip that out real quick.
Yeah.
No, that's not how it is. You are a victor, and you begin to plant that into your children and let them see that there is something special inside of them. Mm-hmm. You know, the reason why the kids say, I can't, I can't, I can't, is because they're afraid of what other people are going to say about
yep.
them. It's all about being intimidated, insecurity.
Yep.
And insecurity has no place in our children.
No.
And if you ever see the beginning stages of that, you need to deal with that quickly
yes.
and effectively.
Yep, absolutely. And any of my peers that have self-destructed, and you see this happen all the time, or people that you hear of in the news and everything, oftentimes you can trace it back to parents not helping their children conquer things.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. What are you helping your kids and grandkids and family members conquer in their lives? What are the small giants that are just having their way with your kids right now that you can help them conquer it so they can have that self-confidence and move from victim to victor? And sometimes if our kids are victims, we think, and this was what you said a couple Sundays ago was so profound in the honor subject. You talked about how sometimes we think kids are going to grow out of things, but they don't. They only grow in deeper to things. That is so profound, and it plays into this too. If our kids are excuse makers and victims, they're not going to grow out of it. They're going to grow deeper into it unless we can coach them out of it and teach them how to get out of it. So, and again, it's not these massive, big speeches and, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be therapy right now. It could be those small little bitty things, eliminating excuses, not allowing it. Don't allow your kids to say, I can't. And it all starts with those. In this same section, Dad, you talk about four qualities every leader needs. And you talked about the I can attitude. You talked about perseverance. Why don't you talk just for a second about the importance of us teaching our kids to persevere through thick and thin?
One of the principles that we had, and again, you know this very, yes. very well. We had a saying in our house, Woodward's never quit.
Right.
And I think that came out of being a youth pastor for 12 years.
Right.
Being a youth pastor, I watched kids, their parents allowed them to quit everything they started.
Yep.
And over a long period of time, I watched them go into adulthood and they carried the same habit as adults.
Yep.
And so in our lifestyle, it was if you signed up for something, if you started football, baseball, or if it was track, whatever it might be, if it was a club at school, that you finished it out, you finished the season. And a lot of times, and this happens with everyone,
yep.
you come home and you don't want to play anymore, you got your feelings hurt, someone was mean to you, the coach is not fair to you. And so parents many times will say, well, okay, we'll let you quit because of that.
So true.
But we would not allow that because we really believe that if you have a conflict with another player, with a coach, then go and sit down with the coach, talk to the person you're having problems with and work that out. But quitting is not an option, and it's a horrible habit to start.
It is, and with me being a youth pastor too, you get a lot of insight because you have so many hundreds, if not thousands of teenagers coming through your ministry, and you get kind of this aerial view of their lives and what causes some teenagers to be successful and others not. And a big portion of that is this. It's teaching, and the next section in here is about commitment, but perseverance leads into commitment. What you commit to, what your kids commit to, they have to finish it.
They have to finish
what you start, because everything right now is in seed form, but it will be in fruit form later on. They will be walking in the harvest of what you are planting right now as parents. One day your kids are going to reap that harvest, and everything's in seed form. Their commitments are in seed form. Finishing what they start. If they don't finish anything they start now, they're not going to finish marriages that they start later.
That's right.
They're not going to finish jobs that they start later. When I preach on this to teenagers and to adults, but mainly to teenagers, I say, look, one of the biggest standards you have to have when you're looking for someone beyond the godliness and their relationship with Jesus, you got to look at them and think, do they finish what they start? Are they constantly complaining about teachers and coaches? Is anything ever their fault? I think one of the most dangerous characteristics of any teenager is when they shift blame, they don't take responsibility, they don't finish their commitments, they don't finish what they start. You know, I've told my daughters, my kids, run from people like they have the plague if they don't finish what they start. Because if they're not finishing it now, they're not going to finish a commitment to you later. And marriage is about thick and thin and finishing what you start. Your jobs are about finishing what you start. So many people have told me, you know, this is my calling. I'm called to do this. I'm called to here. This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm called. But then when they kind of go through thick and thin, all of a sudden it's not so much what God called them to do anymore, because their whole life has been training them not to finish what they start. When it gets tough, run. But that's not what Woodwards do, because that's what we've taught ourselves. And that's not what your family does. If you're listening, whatever your family's last name is, start incorporating this into your home life. This is not what we do, whatever your name is. We finish what we start. We don't complain about teachers. We don't do this. We don't make excuses. We're not victims. Anything else you want to expound on with that?
You know, in our church, we have a lot of business owners, and I've talked to so many of them, and they all say the same thing, that it's hard to find great employees. The reason why is because of this very thing, commitment. If we allow our kids to start a habit of saying things like, I'll show up and help you right. move, and they don't show Ooh. Up, or I'll meet you for lunch, and they're 45 minutes late. Ooh. Well, those things in itself are very, very mild, and it doesn't mean a lot. But if you begin to compound that, and you put all of that together, and over a period of time, you are developing a person that no one can rely on.
Right.
And if you can't rely on them, then you're not going to ask them to do anything, and they're going to miss out on great opportunities.
Oh, Dad, that is, I can't tell, even in a position that I'm in right now, of even the last couple of years of looking to hire potential people or not, it comes down to that.
It does.
Right. I mean, right after the godly factor, that, what you just mentioned, is the thing. Are you reliable? Because in every job you have, and especially in church or wherever, when people are looking to hire someone, there's people on the other side of that hire that are relying on that person being interviewed. They're depending on them. Mm-hmm. If you are not a reliable person, you don't finish what you start, your commitments can't be trusted, you'll never, and it's just so practical. But it starts in the home with small things, a chore. I remember, Dad, so many times you told, I was the worst one with this, I'll just be honest with me and my brothers, but you would tell me to go do a chore. I would go up, and my mentality was, how little can I do? When my dad, because you always did an inspection, I'm gonna be up there in 15 minutes to inspect. I'm like, okay, how little can I do to get by my dad's inspection? And I never learned my lesson, because you were a meticulous inspector, but you would come up and inspect our job. And whether it was, you know, the comforter on our bed being straight or not, you would say, fix that. And you wouldn't come up and go, oh, you didn't do it right, I'm gonna fix it myself. You would come over with us and say, hey, look, just do this. And we wouldn't make our beds in the morning. You would say, Dustin, it takes 30 seconds to make your bed. What's 30 seconds? My entire life.
So you do
life.
Remember that.
Oh, Dad.
30 seconds.
My entire, now I say it to my kids, and so I always blame you. Well, Pop said it to me, you know, but it's so true. It takes 30 seconds. And you would come in and you would say, you would point at something on the ground and say, you need to fix that. And be like, no, do it. It's not to our standard. It's not excellent yet. You did an okay job. You did a good job. It's not an excellent job yet. We do things with excellence in this home. And you would sit there and watch us do it. Not bullying us, not anything like that.
Because parents can overdo that.
They can.
They can become so strict that it goes the opposite direction. But if a parent can do that with great kindness,
exactly.
and also, you know, very helpful, it goes a long ways. And it does teach great patterns in your kids.
I'll tell you a story where I'll be vulnerable for a second. So Asher, our 11-year-old, if you know Asher, he's awesome. He's crazy. He's the life of the party. But he is the most notorious non-bed maker in our home, or has been. And I would kind of get on to him, like, Asher, you didn't make your bed. And I would walk in there like, it's awful. You know, that kind of thing. Like, Asher, make it again, make it right. And he never made his bed right. And I'm just being vulnerable, but my assumption was he's lazy. He's not doing it. And then there was one day I was looking at him making his bed, and I'm like, could it be that I failed him and I never actually taught him? And so I went in there just about 6 months ago, and I was like, I don't think I've ever taught him how to make his bed. I taught him how to make the bed, showed him what to do, what excellence looked like. And it was like this funny little light just came on. And let me tell you something. He is the only kid that makes his bed perfectly in our home every single
morning. Oh, I love that.
That's
great.
And I'd realize I never actually came in and showed him what to do. And I think that's another big part of it too. And that's what you always did. But I think it's so important for us to remember that. Also, you shared a story in your book, and you shared it with me that, you know, there's a line. You want to push your kids. You want them to be excellent. You know, there's a line you can cross, but you shared in here too, when you're pushing your kids to achieve excellence and success in life, so many parents are paranoid about not pushing their kids too far, that they never push their kids hard enough. Can you share a little bit about that? And I know you shared a story in your book about me and talking in front of a staff member one day.
This is a fine line of pushing your kids, as you're saying, to excellence and perfectionist. You don't want to ever push them to become a perfectionist.
Right.
There's real damage that happens.
Right.
Let me show you what the difference is. Excellence is pushing and nudging your children for them to do the very best that they can do as an individual.
That's it.
Being a perfectionist, which is dangerous, what they're doing is they're pushing themselves to please everyone else around them. They want everyone to applaud them.
Right.
And they can never, ever measure up in someone else's eyes. And so they're always unhappy. It can throw them into depression. They are never happy later on in life with their spouse, with their children. No one ever measures up.
Right.
being a perfectionist is extremely dangerous. But also, when it comes to excellence, pushing your kids and their talents and their abilities is so important to help them to really accomplish their God-given responsibility, why they're here on earth. One of the things, when you guys were young, I kind of developed this in my own life, that I always told you guys that at the age of 30 mm-hmm. needs to be a marker in your life, a success marker. By the time you're 30, mm-hmm. when you're graduating from high school, that's when I really started talking about that. And I can remember sitting in my office at the church. Another associate in our church was sitting with us. You had walked in, and we had just hired you on staff, young guy, just out of college. And I remember sitting there and saying that very thing, Dustin, you need to push yourself in your speaking abilities, that you need to develop better study habits. Mm-hmm. And we were going through all of that. And I said, the goal for you is that by the time you turn 30, you want to be on the national stage mm-hmm. of where you're being invited to conferences and churches all over the nation. That's the goal by the time you're 30. Well, a few moments later, after that conversation, you got up and walked out. And the associate of our church at that time was sitting there, and I could tell something was really bothering him. And he said, don't you think that that put way too much pressure on him? He said, why would you ever tell him that? That by the time he's 30, that he ought to have this national stage. He said, don't you think that's too much pressure? Mm-hmm. And I remember saying immediately, not at all. Yeah. I don't think so at all. Because what that is, it is a goal that I am setting. It's not pressure, but if we don't have a goal or a target, then how are we ever going to meet that?
Right.
And all three of you guys, by the time you were 30, you and Brandon, both mm-hmm. in full-time ministry, were on the national stage, being invited all over the country to speak. Jonathan, who is a doctor of pharmacy, right now, at the age of 30, that he has one of the highest-rated pharmacies anywhere in the region.
Yeah.
And it's a standard that by the time I'm 30, that I'm going to reach this level of excellence. And again, what that is just developing your talents, your abilities at the highest level that you can.
It's interesting because, when I was reading this in the book, and you reminded me now, no parent has an issue with a coach pushing their kid and giving their kid goals of excellence on a team. No parent has an issue with a coach saying, hey, this year it's championship or bust. This year, we're going to win the district title. This year, we're going to do this. And everyone knows there's possibilities of achievement or not, but you're going to give it your best kind of a thing. And I never took you challenging me with that or you setting that goal for me as get on the national stage or bust.
No.
But I viewed it as, hey, that's a goal. And why not? Why not work to achieve that goal? I mean, obviously, ultimately, I'm in this position to build the kingdom of God. But why not make that a practical goal?
Well, I can remember sitting with you and saying, if someone's going to do it,
right.
Why not you?
Yeah.
And that's a great thing to ponder.
Yeah.
Why not you?
Yeah. And that's a great mindset for our kids in general. Someone's going to achieve the success in that area. Why not me?
Yeah.
Because again, you don't want your kids being raised to think it can't be me. So why not me? Because if you miss that one, you're going to land somewhere in success and in whatever field they're pursuing. I love that. And I think always remembering that goal setting is not setting anyone up for failure. Our whole life, it's the achievement of goals. What are the goals? We have to set goals for ourselves. And again, as parents, we're the stewards of our kids. We're the gatekeepers. It's not pushing our agendas on them, because that goal, Dad, that you helped me set, that was based off of what I felt God was calling me to do. And you would say, Dustin, is this what God is calling you to do in ministry? You never pushed me into ministry. This was my decision. Mm-hmm. But once I committed to this is what I want to do for a job, this is what God called me to do, it was your job as my father and boss at that time to help set goals. And I think that it's a very reasonable thing with our kids. We've done it with our kids to help them set goals for the next 5 years in their lives and what life should look like in their early 20s. What it could look like if they're dating someone, what the standard needs to be, what college graduation needs to look like, what the pace is, and how many college classes they need to be taking, as a freshman.
Right.
Those are all very normal things that are not, again, we live in this society right now where it feels like if there's any pressure applied at all, you're being oppressive. And we cannot live that way, because people really only live up to their God-given potential when pressure is applied.
They do.
The proper amount.
Yeah, all parents are in a leadership position.
Right.
all parents are not leaders, and we need to be. And again, it's determining what do you want out of your children? Do you want them to be confident or insecure?
Yep.
Do you want them to be a leader or do you want them to be a follower?
Right.
You know, when they're at school, do you want them following other kids or do you want your child to lead the way? And we're determining, you know, what we really want for their lives. And so again, you get the mindset of what you want and you begin to lay that out day by day and you think through that. And, you know, how can I be a leader parent? And I love that phrase because we're all, you know, parents, but I want to be a leader parent. And when you begin to label yourself as that, then it's easier to lead, that it's always in your mind.
Yep. And I will end with this little practical tip, and I'll tell you a story. When Mandy and I, some of you guys listening might know, when Mandy and I first got married, she was a single mom, had three kids when I met her. And so our three older kids are not my biological kids, but I've now adopted them and they're absolutely my kids. But when we first got married, I remember thinking, gosh, you know, I learned from what I felt like was the best dad. I had the best grandfathers. I know how to be a father. I know how to be a dad. When we first got married, man, it just kicked my butt. And especially with three kids all at once. And I was like, oh, I remember, you know, like a year or two into the marriage, I was looking at Mandy crying, going, I'm a failure. I'm the worst dad ever. I don't know what I'm doing. And I know every parent has been there. I just felt like I was the worst. I was like, I don't know how to be a dad. And I should, because I had the best dad. I don't know what I'm doing. And she just looked at me and she said, but Dustin, you know how to lead. She said, instead of getting overwhelmed with trying to figure out how to parent the kids, lead the kids. Where do you want them to go? Lead them. Just be the leader. And for whatever reason, and that might make sense to you listening, it may not, but for whatever reason, that statement clicked with me like crazy. Sometimes people, the word parenting and how to parent is so elusive. It's like, well, I'll never learn how to do that. I didn't have a great father. I didn't have a great mother. Nobody ever coached me. I don't know how to be a parent, but you know how to be a leader. Mm-hmm. You had great coaches. You probably had some great teachers. You had some great role models in your life. Think back, what did they do to lead you well? And take that, whoever's taught you from their great leadership, take that, and instead of getting overwhelmed with not knowing how to be a parent, be a leader. And when you're a leader, you'll be a great parent. And that's what I love so much about this chapter and so much about this book, Dad. And we can end there, but I just wanna say, Dad, thank you so much for the time I got to personally experience and watch the time and investment. This was not written by a ghostwriter. Every word of this book was written by you, from your heart, from what you felt like God was calling you to write. And I know along with everyone listening and watching that's gotten your book, we all just want to say thank you for taking the time to do this. It's impacted all of our lives. We thank you for guiding us, giving us wisdom in this. And again, if you haven't purchased the book yet, A Matter of Time, make sure you do that. You can get it at galenwoodward.org or our church website, citizen.church. It will help you. I encourage you to get it for yourself, get it for a family member, get it for a friend. And it's doing really well. And again, Dad, thank you so much. And hope you guys have enjoyed our four-part series on A Matter of Time. Until next time, see you later.
Thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to hit subscribe and share it with your friends.